This documentary is made possible from funding from the Resonating Reconciliation Grant from the National Campus and Community Radio Association and support from the CJSR FM 88.5 in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. If you are in crisis and need emotional support, please call the 24-hour National Crisis Line at 1-866-925-4419. My name is Jody Stonehouse, host of Atchimwin on CJSR and the moderator of this panel. You are listening to Understanding the TRC, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, exploring reconciliation, intergenerational trauma, and Indigenous resistance. The speakers featured on this panel were Commissioner Dr. Wilton Littlechild, Dr. Rebecca Sockbeeson, Dr. Ian Mosby, James Daschuk, Dr. Kevi Martin, Tanya Capo. Rebecca Sockbeeson is our final panelist. She's an activist. She's a scholar. She graduated from Harvard University, where she received her master's. She's done her PhD in educational policy, specializing in Indigenous people's education. Her research focus is on Indigenous knowledge, Aboriginal healing through language and culture, anti-racism, and decolonization. Her doctoral study engages in how Indigenous ways of knowings and being can inform policy development. Please help me welcome Rebecca Sockbeeson.
I can just feel all this energy coming this way, so I'm just shaking. First, let me offer thanks to Auntie Dorothy, Rocky Morin, and Lyle for starting us off with prayer, and Reggie for bringing that smudge around. It was these practices for 100 years that Dr. Will Littlechild is talking about that were outlawed, And it's important to have that whenever we start out these gatherings, because we always need to be reminded that our ancestors are always with us. It's like I'm thinking about late Harold Cardinal as Tanya is talking, and feeling his presence here, feeling the presence of the people that came before us that suffered and struggled so hard and so much in order for us to even be here, because we weren't supposed to be here. Like, the intention was to eradicate us. So praying in prayerful ways and calling them in, the songs, bringing in late Logan Alexis with his elder song was the way to start. So I want to acknowledge and thank Auntie Dorothy and those singers. Okay, it's also my mother, who's 4,000 miles away. I don't know if this is still streamlined, but she was going to be listening. She prays lots, and I want to acknowledge that and thank her for praying for us. She prays for all of our people. So, I want to thank the other panelists for dedicating your lives and your research toward the vision of social and political change for our people. Dr. Littlechild, thank you for listening to those people, to our people. And may the Creator bless you and protect you and carry you with love and compassion. The emotional intelligence that this necessitates is just unsurpassed and unimaginable. My name is Rebecca Sockbeeson. I'm of the Penobscot Indian Nation. I come here. My husband is of the Alexis First Nation. We have three children that are band members. They're Stony Sioux. And I'm now on faculty in the Faculty of Education and in the Indigenous Peoples Education Program specialization. I coordinate that graduate specialization. I was asked by Jody to come here and talk about intergenerational trauma and socioeconomic legacies of the Indian Residential Schools. So my words are dedicated to the late Gary Latender, my children's grandpa, my husband's uncle, who walked from Erminskin Residential School as a young man all the way to Alexis to escape the horrors that he was experiencing. My following thoughts about this intergenerational trauma and the socioeconomic legacies have been heavily influenced by my mother, who was a survivor of so much dispossession, and she is, you know, in my heart always. My scholarship has been heavily influenced by Dr. Cora Weber-Pilwax, one of the senior most Aboriginal scholars on this campus, and much of what I'm about to read, I've written a poem, is also her analysis, so I want to make sure that I cite my intellectual influences in this, particularly in this context. During my doctoral work, we worked with the Oblates, and we were commissioned at first to look at the codices as graduate students. We secured Dr. Cora Weber-Pilwax secured a Community University Research Alliance grant via SHRC, and as Indigenous doctoral students, we were to look at these codices of the Oblates. As we began to embark upon that process, they got held up in litigation, and we weren't allowed to see them. So the direction of the research project shifted dramatically, and I had just conceived my third child. Jibonug is his name. And my auntie was saying, maybe this is a real blessing in disguise, because that would have been a lot of horror to have to engage with, being, you know, pregnant. And so we started to think about how we were going to redirect, and that the theme was healing through language and culture, Aboriginal healing through language and culture, a very distinct research project amongst really any SHRC afforded research project. And the link here was to engage with communities, and we are from our communities. So as doctoral students, we had a very distinct opportunity to engage in this intellectual and healing space, because we, in fact, are the data that we collect as Indigenous scholars engaging with socioeconomic legacies of colonialism. To hear my new friend here, Tanya, talk about what her late father, the impacts, like that which we are writing on is that which we are experiencing. It's not something abstract. It's not a data collection that we do for 7 years or 6 years and then just write about. So it's the healing necessary in the process is intrinsic to the success of the completion of our doctoral work. So it's with that I want to acknowledge that and relay to you you know, the significance that had on my life and my ability to be sitting here as an Indigenous scholar with a PhD. I named my work Jibonug, which in my language means the East, and it means red hope. And I wanted to engage with the healing of our people. I also wanted to uncover the genocide that we have survived and continue to experience. And I knew in order to continue engaging with that and to be teaching about it, that that I had to think about hope and red hope. You know, red hope is that hope for our people. And so I'll read this to you, and it will maybe help me to flow through this a little bit more quickly or more smoothly. Okay, Jibonug, Red Hope. Intergenerational trauma has met our Indigenous intergenerational survival. Intergenerational, the passing on to the next generation. Intergenerational survival, the passing on of how to survive the trauma imposed upon our people. This is the Indigenous knowledge of love and compassion. We must be reminded of the power of love and compassion. It has helped us to survive, and for some of us, maybe even thrive. We are still here. We were not intended to even be here. We have, in fact, survived the largest act of genocide the world has ever known. That's 97% depletion of original populations. Praying in our languages and using our medicines today, even though they were outlawed and punishable for 100 years. An international recognition that a crime against humanity has occurred here. A crime has been committed, an apology made, payouts have been distributed in an alleged attempt to reconcile for the crimes. But we ask, who is the criminal? Has a criminal been named? Has the criminal been judged? Intergenerational trauma. Yes, we know it. It's in our blood. The memories of trauma run through our veins. Many of our people refer this to as blood memory or soul wound. The Indian residential schools, the 60s scoop, this indeed is a systematic dispossession of the human right to transfer love and happiness. The low fluency of our indigenous languages is not our fault. It's not a loss. It has been a systemic dispossession.
You are listening to the University of Alberta Truth and Reconciliation Panel event that took place on March 20th, 2014.
We live it, our parents lived it, their parents, and we pray and hope our children don't. There can't be any reconciliation until there is truth. Truth is, 1 in 5 mainstream Canadians receive university degrees, 1 in 5, while only 1 in about 33 to perhaps even upwards to 40 Aboriginal people receive university degrees. 9 in 10 Aboriginal men have been incarcerated at least one time in their life. Aboriginal people are more likely to go to prison than university, more likely to be homeless, the most likely to be homeless in our own homeland, the least likely to be homeowners in our own mother country. Aboriginal women are more impoverished than any other group, and by 5 to 7 times are more likely to die violent deaths. Truth, these are the truths. Truth is, we are so very much more than the oppression and the statistics. Alberta experienced the heaviest population of residential school students. We also experience today the highest unemployment rates of Aboriginal people than any other province. The TRC process has engaged with survivor stories, and for many it has been healing for them and their families, and for others it has had a devastating impact. Jibonog, Red Hope, engages with the hope that our people will continue healing and always remember that we are so very much more than the oppression. Red Hope also calls for institutional reconciliation. How can Canadian institutions reconcile its oppressive history and policies against Aboriginal people? This can no longer be the responsibility of the victims and their stories. The victims need to heal The relationship between the Canadian government and our people need desperate repair. Regional public-funded universities and institutions like the U of A can have a significant role in the institutionalizing of the reconciliation process. There can be no reconciliation until there is truth. So how might we institutionalize the reconciliation? What can that look like? I also coordinate Alberta's first compulsory course in Aboriginal education, where much of what we do is tell the truth. As scholars, we tell the truth. Dr. Dwayne Donald is here. He's one of my colleagues that helps to teach this course. And we have some seminar leaders that have joined us, too. This is the first time in the province's history that a regional, comprehensive public institution has made it mandatory that pre-service teachers learn about things like the Indian residential schools and its impacts. We are roughly 10 years behind our, UBC, USASC, and the compulsory mandating of coursework to teach about the truth. So it's with that I raise this idea of, where to next. We're in the last year of the commission. How can the nation repair their relationship, and how might that be manifested in the institutions? The regional publicly funded universities like the U of A have a distinct responsibility, not just ability and capacity, but a responsibility to take up the delivery of compulsory coursework like what we're launching in the Faculty of Education. And it has, what's distinct in the Faculty of Education is that the development of the course has been led by us as Indigenous scholars. Us as Indigenous scholars who have dedicated much of our lives to uncovering the truth and engaging with Indigenous knowledge systems and the valuing of Indigenous knowledge systems, the privileging of Indigenous knowledge systems. So it's with that, as I continue to think about reconciliation and how might the Canadian government, how might regionally comprehensive public-funded universities institutionalize and take part actively and meaningfully in the reconciliation process and the repairing of this relationship. And that may very well be manifested in a national policy that makes it compulsory for every Canadian to know the truth. And reconciliation cannot happen without the truth. And the universities have a responsibility. Remember, the Kill the Indian, Save the Man educational policy that led and was the foundation of the Indian residential school system was an educational policy. This was a national educational policy. So how might we institutionalize the undoing of that and the addressing of that and the uncovering and the telling of the truth? So it's with that I'm reminded that the TRC has a mandate to learn about what happened in the Indian residential schools, and this is taken from their website, to share this truth with all Canadians. In the words of the TRC Chair, Justice Murray Sinclair, quote, "My fellow commissioners and I have made a commitment to former students that we will hear from as many of them as we are logistically and humanly able to. The commission hopes to guide and inspire First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples and Canadians in a process of truth, healing, and renewed relationships based on mutual understanding and respect. The commission views reconciliation as an ongoing individual and collective process requiring participation from all of those affected by the residential school experience. This includes First Nations, Inuit, Métis former students, their families, communities, religious groups, former Indian residential school employees, the government, and the people of Canada." So it's with that I close and I call for and raise this notion of increased compulsory education within the nation throughout regionally comprehensive publicly funded universities like the U of A to work on and work toward the telling of the truth in institutionalized ways so that it's compulsory. The course that we've been teaching, I coordinate the effort. We will reach upwards to 700 to 800 students a year. The Faculty of Education at the U of A educates about 60 to 70% of Albertan teachers in the province. Up until this point, we haven't had a required course, and there are still 35,000 teachers out there that haven't had access to any of the truth of what we have, you know, what the students are required to listen to and engage with and be successful in the course. So I wanted to share with you this idea and offer it to the commissioner and see where we might go with it. And it's with that I extend lots of love and compassion to each of you, for all of us, for even listening and sitting through this. Each one of you brought tears to my eyes, and you made my heart race. And it's with that I extend my deepest gratitude to each of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. I want to give a heartfelt thank you from the Faculty of Native Studies to each of you for being here. We have 5 minutes for quick questions. There's been two microphones set up there. So if you can state your name and who your question is to, we will have 5 minutes for questions, and then we will have bannock and berries.
Nancy. Hi. To all the Indigenous scholars here, Dr. Ebert Hampton and Becca, I'm Rodney McLeod, OTC Frog Lake. I'm currently in the Indigenous Peoples Education master's program, and also a seminar lead in the compulsory course with the 211 course. And I've been learning tremendously and through the course, and for me, the healing journey has been brought to my recognition. It's been recognized as being synonymous with the transformation. And this transformation within me, you know, I'm also non-Indigenous. My dad's white as can be. Well, not in that sense. He's right into ceremony. He's trying to get in touch with his being, spiritual being. But the major transformation is, for me, I guess, in the broader context of our Canadian society would be from the egocentric to the ecocentric. That paradigm shift is vitally important, I believe, in bringing recognition to our colonized societies to recognize our relationship. And I feel that in my journey as a spiritual being, it can be very difficult in walking in this Western society, right, trying to be, just trying to be as an Indigenous person, and being confronted with these blatant racism that our youth have to deal with every day, that we all have to deal with every day. So I guess my point is that bringing that transformation from the egocentric to the ecocentric, because That's all I've been taught in Western society, is just to be about myself and not to be considerate about the other spiritual entities that give us life that we're so mystified by. But thank you guys all so much, tremendously. It means the world to us as Indigenous youth to have you guys work the work you guys are doing. And hi, Miigwech.
My name is Jim Graves, and my question is about the truth. The truth is dangerous. When I think of an image, I think of a horse sort of sensing danger and backing away. So as the Canadian people are confronted with this truth, what do the panelists here have to say in terms of perhaps advice that might help in moving forward, despite the danger, because the truth itself is very dangerous? I'm just thinking that the truth presented by you this afternoon is if we really stop to consider it, it poses, if we all kind of embraced it, our whole society would kind of be in disarray. So I guess it might be a bit of an institutional question, or maybe just your reaction to that question.
Thank you for your question. Commissioner, would you like to respond to that?
Everyone has a right to the truth. It's a fundamental human right, and it should not be feared. I remember one of the elders saying that we have to get out of the rut we're in of fear, because we've been taught as children by way of punishment or treatment in schools to fear, even to fear God, because you were told if you were left-handed, you're a devil's child, or you're possessed by the devil. So I think we should not fear the truth, because as your analogy, and it's a good one, of a horse, when they sense fear, they will shy away perhaps sometimes, or buck. But at the same time, you know that if you use your feet gently, you can calm that horse, and it will not fear what it is they were scared about. So hopefully, through our work, we can engage the rest of Canada in this journey, because this is not an Aboriginal problem. It's a Canadian problem. And we need to be able to encourage each other in safe setting, not to fear each other, and instead embrace each other in a way that we can walk together. Because I think also, if we walk together, we support each other. And when you have support from another, it gives you courage and you don't fear anymore. So I think, again, it calls on us to work together on this initiative. So let's not fear the truth. Let's embrace it and use it to inform, as I said before, our path to reconciliation. But it's a very important observation, and I thank you for that.
Thank you for joining the TRC Exploring Reconciliation, Intergenerational Trauma, and Indigenous Resistance. You can go to the TRC website. Also, the Faculty of Native Studies website will air this recast so you can watch it again. Thank you all. Thank you, panelists, very much for your words today. Hi, hi, miigwech. For listening to this panel at the University of Alberta on the Truth and Reconciliation. For more information about Truth and Reconciliation, please visit www.trc.ca. This documentary is made possible from funding from the Resonating Reconciliation Grant from the National Campus and Community Radio Association, and support from CJSR FM 88.5 in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. If you are in crisis and need emotional support, please call the 24-hour National Crisis Line at 1-866-925-4419. As we recognize here at the station that some of this information triggers trauma and is painful to hear, and we want you to feel supported, so please call if you need emotional support. Hi, hi, miigwech for listening.